This is Phil Farrand.
And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I think it's episode 610. Oh, man. Don't know when to quit. All is well. Although, I do have to say, I do have to say that there's trouble in River City. So, because I keep forgetting that it gets dark so soon now, so I make plans, I'm going in, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, then I'm driving home, then I'm doing the podcast. So it's 10 till 6, and it's dark. And I have notes, and I'm not going to be able to see my notes. So, I got the gist of it. Maybe I'll blather along until I get back in the garage, and then once I get back in the garage, I'll do some quotes from the actual article, and we'll go from there. As far as the rest of stuff, all is well. Had a good week this week so far. We are closing cash receipts tonight. That usually goes okay. There's always the potential that it won't. And of course, this gets back to what I've talked about in the past, that the flesh is going to constantly use the future as a bludgeon and try to stir up anxiety within you because of what the future might hold. Except the flesh has no idea what the future really holds. So while it's sitting down there going, hugga bugga bugga, this may happen, that may happen, hugga bugga bugga, it really doesn't know if that's what's going to happen. Consequently, you can decide whether or not you're going to listen to that, or you can say, you know what? There's every possibility that may happen. There's no question. All the servers might melt down. Asteroid might hit the server room. Nobody gets paid. Everybody will be mad. There's no question that might happen. On the other hand, it might go astonishingly well, and no one will notice. Which is usually the way it goes. You know, no one looks back at the soundboard when the sound is good. So, you know, you decide what you're going to believe, and you just say, you know what, that is certainly a possibility, but it's also possible that everything will go just fine. We will be green up and down the board, and if we're all green, we'll just go along on our merry day way, and tomorrow we will celebrate. Probably going to celebrate tomorrow anyways. Things would have to go spectacularly wrong for me not to celebrate tomorrow. So we're probably going to celebrate anyways. Tomorrow is International Day of the Ninja. So that'll be fine. Last week we did celebrate Black Friday, which was Christmas is Coming Day. I may have mentioned that it was also National You're Welcome Giving Day. Was never really sure how that was supposed to work. I looked it up and there were some explanations, but all I could think was, I guess you're supposed to go around all day and go, you're welcome. Yes, you're welcome. I don't... anyways, but people seemed to get a kick out of it, and I had lots of bells on, little jingle bells, and so, given half a chance, you know, I'd do a quick little dance and tell them, Christmas is coming! People seemed to enjoy that. I did say goodbye to a friend on Friday. I think I mentioned in the past that there was a shop owner right next to UPS that I had gotten to know over the last few weeks, and then I had gone in one day to drop in and say hello to UPS, and the shop owner had big signs up next door that said, going out of business, and I was like, oh, So I went in to talk to her, and I said, "You're leaving." She said, "Yeah, yeah." She said, "But I'll be here through the end of the month." Well, last Friday was the end of the month. So I said goodbye. She gave me a hug. You know, so who knows? Our paths may cross again at some point. But she was fun. She was fun. So anyways, all went well there. Everything's ready to go for Day of the Ninja. After that will be International Day of the Monkey. I think I've pretty well squared away for that one as well. So that'll be fine. And then after that is Ugly Christmas Sweater Day, which is the A Christmas Story costume that I've got to pull out of storage and see what needs to be repaired on it. It took some beating last night, so see if I can actually hobble around in it again, so that'll be fun. And then after that's Elf Day, and then we're done with the year. So, but I'm already planning into next year, of course. So after I get the Christmas Story costume squared away, then I'm going to hop on National Argyle Day, which is the second week. It's the 8th. It's the second Friday in January. National Argyle Day. So we'll do a court jester costume for that, since the Argyle pattern is diamonds. There's another name for the diamonds. I forgot what it is. I don't know. Anyway, so that'll be fun, and I've got a dental appointment. National Argyle Day, so it'll be fun going down there in a jester's costume. It'll be fun. Anyways, so that's well. Writing is fine. I'm not quite as far along as I'd like to be. But it's going okay. It's going fine. I'm just doing the read-through at this point of book 13. I got all the input back from the beta readers, and some kind things were said. I'm in the process of putting in that input. I've had some nice conversations, and I have one more to go. It looks like it'll go in next week at some point. And then, once I get the read-through done, build files, get everything uploaded. The plan is to have everything uploaded by December 15th. That gives me a couple of weeks, theoretically a couple of weeks off. It never works out that way because I just keep working away at it. Then I hop back to build 14, and I think I know where I'm going with book 14, I just got to work out the details, but I think I know where I'm going with book 14. Book 14 is about half done. Haven't really gotten into the main plot yet on book 14 because I'm doing some housekeeping stuff. Those windshield wipers make a lot of noise. So I'm doing some housekeeping stuff, taking care of a few storylines, you know, wrapping up some things. There was a big change to the number of personnel who were on the ship on the Dominion at the end of the last book. And so because of that, then of course you have to answer the questions of how has this affected everyone who is on the crew and new to the crew. And so the first couple of books, or first several chapters, just deal with that. But we're getting down to the point where we're ready to do something. So there was another storyline that I filtered in through there as well to keep the whole thing going, so it wasn't all just human interest. So that's all seems to be going fine. I'm finishing up book 13 right now for production. That's book 14. Then I have one more book that's probably a kind of a monster of the week book. And then we hit the big one, which is 16. So 15 will be another monster of the week, and then 16 gets us back to the big overarching story. And it will be the end of the second set of books. So that's not actually going to hit until, let's see, this is book 13. Book 15 will be next Christmas. And then July of 2022. 2022. That seems incredible. Will be when book 16 hits. And when book 16 hits, July of 2022, I will be 3 years from retirement, which just seems crazy. It just seems crazy. Very interesting to see how everything's going, where we are at that point. That will also be around the time frame when our main programmer is going to be retiring from AGWM. Goodness, that'll be a transition. So lots of interesting things going on over the next year and a half, 2 years. But as with everything, it's step at a time. Step at a time. Enjoying the moments, moving with him, being grateful for life. So this week, my notes are sitting beside me here in the car, but the car is dark. So I'm just going to start working on this and doing most of this off the top of my head. And then we'll pick up and maybe do some quotes once I make it back to my garage. Which, my garage is only, it's about 7 minutes away at this point. And believe me, I can flap my gums for 7 minutes without too much troubles. We'll be fine. This article, the title of this article was something like, our parents warned us about the internets and then it broke their brains or something like that. And it's always interesting to me when you have this perspective of someone pointing out how something has happened to someone else. Oh, this did that to them. Because just from a human nature standpoint, when we level accusations or observations against others, the flesh is very good about slipping us into a mode where we see in others the faults that we are manifesting. We criticize in others the faults that we are manifesting. It's always interesting to me when people use the phraseology, oh, such and such and such caused me to lose my faith in humanity. To me, that's a really interesting perspective, that I, the great exalted, am losing my faith in humanity. Okay, great. Because immediately, what that signals that you are obviously better than the people that you are judging wanting. So even if you're not doing it on an individual basis, but you're just doing it on the great amorphous they, obviously I'm better than they. And yet in those situations, what can happen a lot of times is that the thing that someone is criticizing the they for, if they become reflective enough, they might find out that, in fact, they are doing the same things that the they are doing, the amorphous they. And we see this kind of behavior in politicians, especially now with all the COVID restrictions. I just think it's hysterical that we have as many politicians as we have laying out all of these arduous ground rules, and then going out and breaking them. Obviously breaking them. Do they think no one is going to see them? It's just astonishing. So the gist of this article was that isn't it terrible how the internet has broken the brains of the baby boomers? How that the baby boomers are so susceptible to being led astray by false news. Now, to the author's credit who wrote this article, to her credit, she does mention Fox News a bunch of times, but she also mentions CNN, MSNBC, all of these. And she said they all contribute to this. They all cater to a certain viewpoint. They all try to stir up emotions in the way that they write things and the way they couch things. You know, she was talking about how that her parents, and a lot of people tell her, my parents are just like that, you know, are constantly spun up. They're on Facebook, you know, republishing, sharing articles that are all about who did something to whom and how that's not right, and blah, blah, blah. They're going back and forth, and they're just in this constant stir all the time where everybody's torn up and yelling and hollering. And it's interesting because the article is very much pointed towards how terrible this is, that this has happened to the boomers. And yet, at multiple times during the article, does the author of the article come back around and say, well, and it's happening to me too, and it's happening to this, but at least I try to XXX and do this, do that, blah, blah, blah. And the article had, you know, some three big reasons, and I'm not going to get these right, but maybe we'll revisit them when I get back to the garage. Three big reasons why, you know, her generation isn't as susceptible as the boomers. Three big reasons. Okay, sure. You know, one of them is that, let's see, they know not to watch anything that YouTube recommends to them. And I'm thinking, come on, really? You never watch anything that YouTube recommends. You don't hop on that front page and scroll down and look and see what's there. The only time you use YouTube is when you go to look up something specific or to check on someone specific, and you never, ever come on. And the other ones were like that too. It's like, well, we know that such and such. Really? Do you really know that? Or are you influenced as well? And is it only because what your parents are coming up with is something that you disagree with? There was an interesting exchange that she had, supposedly with her mom, I think, the author of the article, where her mom brought something up and she told her mom, Mom, don't watch that. Don't watch that. And her mom's like, what? What's the problem? Well, look at that logo. Don't watch that. That logo's terrible. Don't watch that. Because the arbiter of truth is, what does your logo look like? I think we can safely say that the internet has broken all of us in one way or another. A guy had written an article way back, I don't know, in 2008-ish, something like that, about what the internet was doing to our brains. And he wrote the article because he said that he had this gut feeling that something was wrong. And he talked about concentration and contemplation, and how that when you just have everything plowing towards you all the time, that you lose your bearings in that. And I think that's absolutely true. And the author of the article references and thinks it's true as well. That it's very difficult if you're on your phone all the time, to be contemplative and to have focus, because there's always something else to check. And honestly, you know, I see those things in myself as well. So I'm definitely not coming at this with the idea that, no, my brain's not broken. I would say definitely my brain is different because of the internet than it might have been 5 or 10 years ago. But lands, this whole system level analyst study I've done on gender has certainly changed my brain, and that had nothing to do with the internet. So I think our brains are changing all the time. And I think what serves us well is not necessarily, I'm getting my mail, one moment, is not necessarily figuring out the damage that it's doing to other people, but perhaps the better approach is to figure out a way to ameliorate some of that damage. And when I came across this article and started reading through it, I thought, you know, I've mentioned this before, but it might be good to mention again. In fact, I might have mentioned it last week, but it might be good to mention again. And that is, there's a pretty easy way to figure out if what you're currently doing is helping your brain or hurting it. And that easy way is simply to consider the emotions that are being ginned up as you are doing whatever you're doing. Now, some people, I'm in my garage, whoop whoop. Some people might say, well, you can't really use what I'm about to say as a yardstick because it can't be true. It can't be true that every time that comes up, that it signals something that is not good for you. But let me suggest this to you as the basic foundational structure of life. There is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. This life is not the end. This life is the beginning. And we win. And the number of people who win will surprise us. I am convinced that God, in His kindness and His mercy and His gentleness and in His love, will reconcile, will bring more people to Himself than we think in our wildest imaginations, because He has already reconciled us to Himself. That's what Paul says. That's why I changed my word when I hit reconciled, because reconciled is done. Paul says, 2 Corinthians 5, I think it is, 19, this is paraphrased, that God in Christ Jesus reconciled or was reconciling the world to Himself, no longer counting men's sins against them. If the problem of sin has been decided, if there is now no condemnation, there is nothing to fear. There may be some challenges in life. Things may not always go like we want. But in the end, we win. Period. We win. What that should evoke in us is gratefulness, is calm, is gentleness, love, kindness. We do not need to scramble. We do not need to claw. We do not need to be angry or envious or greedy. And all of those things are simply manifestations of lies that are being told into our spirit. So, I'm in the garage. So let's go back and review a little bit. It was cute. She started off the article. Bonnie Christian is her name. The title of the article was, "Our parents warned us the internet would break our brains. It broke theirs instead." Instead, i.e., but it didn't break ours. Whoa. But she goes on later to say, "Well, yeah, it's too bad." So she starts out and she said, "My college dorm was the first place I had reliable home internet access. That was in part because my mom shared all the late 1990s and the early 2000s parenting, fears about the internet breaking our brains." So obviously she didn't get the internet till she got to college. "These worries were an extension of prior concerns about television. Don't sit so close. You'll hurt your eyes staring at the screen so long. How many hours today? That stuff rots your mind. You're getting manipulated by ads. Go outside. Go see your friends. No, you can't see an R-rated movie. Those images will be in your brain forever. No, we are not watching that on a school night. No, you can't have one in your room." With the internet, there was the extra element of suspicion. Don't use your real name or post a picture of yourself. Pedophiles could literally be everywhere. Don't go to sites you don't know. Porn could literally be anywhere. Don't believe everything you read, especially if it's not from a reputable source. Lies could literally be anywhere. Then she goes on to say, 2 decades later, so many boomers that warned millennials to be careful on the internet seem to have forgotten all their own warnings. Their brains are broken, and that destruction is threatening to break our relationships too." Okay, so she goes on to talk about a book called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. That was 2011. No, let's see, there was an article. Yes, the article came out in 2008. "Our habitual distraction is debilitating. Addiction is often either too strong a word or not entirely metaphorical. The brokenness I'm describing is more than distraction. Carr focuses on the medium over the message. In, quote, in the long run, a medium's content matters less than the medium itself in influencing how we think and act," he said in his book. The writer of the article says, "I don't disagree, but what we're seeing now is that the content itself cannot be discounted as a potential force for mental disorder and relational discord." Absolutely true. So the conversation I related before, me, "This is really sketchy. I don't think you should read this." Her, as in her mom. "What's sketchy about it?" Me, I can't tell you if you can't see it. It's a bunch of little things. It's like, look at that logo. You can't trust that. Her, but why? Try to explain it to me. Me, just look at the logo. Look the way it looks. Her, ... So anyways, so of course the boomers are sending around all kinds of stuff and yada, yada, yada. And of course, Facebook and YouTube are feeding them all types of stuff. She notes, "We can't have a conversation about politics anymore. They're always dialed up to 11. They're always dialed up to 11. Really? And you're not. You're not. So not, then she goes on finally and she says, "None of this is to suggest my generation's brains are immune to internet breaking. But there are some important distinctions here. Three in my observation that give this a generational dimension. The first, and this is based on data, is that younger generations are less likely to dose themselves with the poison of cable news." Okay, so people aren't watching cable news. Okay, but she goes on to say, of course, there's more sources of input than just cable news, right? Because they put clips on YouTube, they put clips on Facebook, they put clips everywhere, blah, 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 blah. So that brings me to the second generational distinction, the degree of innate understanding of the medium. "I do not think my older family members understand the extent to which their content they encounter is tailored by algorithms to set their lizard brains on fire." Right. But even if you know it's tailored to set your lizard brain on fire, it will still set your lizard brain on fire for the reasons we're going to discuss in a minute. Okay, she says, "I thought my own parents would be safe from all this because thank God they're not on any of the big three social media sites. They don't have cable and their tech skills are limited. As it turns out, that's irrelevant. The internet is so user-friendly now, it can break anyone's brain." Okay, now we've gone to the point of it's breaking their brains to, well, yes, it's probably breaking our brains some, to it can break anyone's brain. All right. YouTube and a few of the political email lists are all it takes. And now that this content history is established, my mom's search results are tailored accordingly. Of course they are. The brokenness is self-reinforcing. The third distinction is real-life social networks, a distinction that has been grossly exacerbated by the isolation of the pandemic. The digital communications my friends and I have used to stay close these past 9 months has been far from ideal, but it's still much better than nothing. We can still talk. We can still gather to play games online and share joys and troubles. Our parents have not generally managed that pandemic time connectivity to their friends. Indeed, if they had close friends in the first place. The common thread in the discussion of broken boomers' brains is the lack of intimate friendships and hobbyist communities. Okay, I'll close by reiterating that I do not mean this as a generational broadside. Boomers are not the only ones whose brains the internet is breaking. Okay, well, it sort of flies in face of the title of the article, because the title of the article is "Our Parents Warned Us the Internet Would Break Our Brains. It Broke Theirs Instead." It's pretty exclusionary. The other way to write that would be, "Our parents warned us that the internet would break our brains. It did, and it broke theirs as well." You see the difference between those two? She goes on to say, "Though I do think the generational trope is significantly correct, I am aware daily that my brain is also broken," and she would tend to give herself the benefit of the doubt so that she can say she's not as broken. Okay? So she has some things that she does, which, you know, all these things are good things. "I am working to keep it from breaking further. I don't have apps for email, Facebook, or Twitter on my phone. I try to stay off Twitter all weekend and eschew news and political content all day on Sunday. Each morning, I do my blankest not to let looking at my phone be the first thing I do. I track my phone's screen time, set caps on all the times I spend on political sites. Spend caps on the political sites I frequent and social media apps like Instagram and StatChat. I mute any friend whose Instagram is political because I know the tiny adrenaline rush it produces will help me train me to check Instagram more often than I should. I unsubscribe from everything I can." All of these things are good things. "I am determined to use what I've learned about my broken brain to keep my children's brain from being broken too." She ends with saying, "I am obliged to be on the internet all the time for my work, and I love it, but I hate it. More days than not, I ignore my own best laid plans to keep my brain as unbroken as I can. In a real sense, I took those early internet warnings to heart. What worries me so much is that too many of the very people who warned me seem to have forgotten their warnings entirely." That is absolutely true. They're not fighting the break. It seems like they don't even feel it anymore. Yeah. So this is a quote from someone who has a Fox News dad. Quote, "Our parents' generation, no less than ours, was totally unprepared for the advent of digital technology and mass media," wrote the reader with a Fox News dad. "They've been sucked into their screens like the rest of us. They weren't physically abducted, as they feared we would be by the chat room catfisher in 1999, but it can still feel like the people we know and love are gone." And that is true. So what's my little solution? Here's my little 5 cents. There is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. This life may be challenging. This life may require some effort on our part. But at the base of it, this life is good. And our very existence is held together by a God who loves us beyond all of our comprehension, and who is waiting every day to help us moment by moment if we will avail ourselves of that help. I mean, I could give you I can give you all kinds of stories. I'll give you a quick story that happened today. So at the end of the month, we run what are called the AERs, the Associate Expense Reports. Through the month, people use our new paperless system to file expenses, turn in expenses with receipts and all that kind of stuff. At the end of the month, we put it all together. We build what are called MFA transactions that then have to be pushed inside the firewall and into MFA so that we don't have to rekey all that stuff. When I kicked that thing off today, it built 120 of these reports. A couple of hundred MFA transactions to push in. And when I hit that button, I was going to turn loose 3, 4, 5, 6 people. They were all going to go in and start trying to hammer those MFA transactions up and over the firewall and into MFA. The particular routine that actually inserts them all into MFA is signed. That may not mean much to some of you, but in SQL Server, it's signed for permissions. Every time you recompile that routine, you lose the permissions on it. So I had asked for an update, quick update that I should have gotten done earlier, but I woke up this morning and I was like, wait a minute, we gotta have that. So I wrote, that update got done, but at the same time, there was a bug that was fixed in the routine. Now the permissions are gone. I am within a couple of hours of pushing the button and having 4 to 5 people jumping on that thing and trying to get those AERs completed. And in that time frame, one of the processors, one of the specialists, they're called, gets a nudge that, hey, you should really try to complete that SDR. You should try to complete that SDR. So she hops on. She tries to complete the SDR. She gets the error. She writes me. She says, hey, I'm trying to complete this SDR, but I'm getting this error. I look at the error. I know immediately what's happened. I mean, it's like 60 minutes. I'm getting ready to push this button. I'm like, okay, let's get that fixed. So, you know, we trace back, we figure out, oh, yeah, this was changed, and blah, blah, blah. We go in, you know, we reapply, they reapply the signature. She hops on, boom, puts it through. Poof. It was funny because she actually hopped on and put it through before the official word came to us that it had been updated. And she said, hey, it worked. And then about, you know, 10 minutes later, the guy who was doing the updating came back and said, hey, it worked. You know, okay, try it now. Well, she'd already tried it, which is fine. It worked. I went over and checked. It got through. I went immediately out of that to run the harvest. Everything balanced. I check on it 20 minutes later. All the stuff's going over. Okay, so was that big of a deal? Was it that big of a deal that we fixed it beforehand as opposed to when everyone was plowing into it and hammering it? No, it's not that big of a deal, but it sure was kind of Jesus. It was kind of Jesus to give her a little nudge, to get her to do something ahead of time, just minutes after we lost permissions so that we could turn around and get the permissions fixed before we did the big harvest. Okay, that stuff happens to me all the time. There is nothing to fear. That is not to say that I don't make mistakes. That is not to say that we do not encounter troubles. But dozens of years have gone by now. Decades have gone by where Jesus works things out. So because of that, because that is true, we actually live in our best truth when we are moving through life with kindness and gentleness and gratitude and graciousness and patience and long-suffering. When we are living life in the Spirit. And that means that if we are manifesting the works of the flesh, we are not living our best life. So here's my quick, simple, I'm not going to say simplistic because it's simple, but I don't think it's simplistic because it's hard to keep in focus and to stay on. Here's the thing. No matter what you're doing, if, as you are going through life, if you feel the rising of any of the things that Paul classifies as the work of the flesh, if you feel that rising within you, you can guarantee that it is the flesh and that you should lean away from that. Now, what are those things? Paul lays them right out in Galatians 5:19. When you follow the desires of your sinful nature, in other words, when the flesh pokes you and prods you, and you respond by listening to it and then moving in the direction it's pushing you, the results are very clear. Sexual immorality, impurity, lustful pleasures, idolatry, sorcery. Now we read all those and we say, well, I'm not doing any of those things. Then he goes on to say hostility, quarreling, jealousy, outburst of anger, selfish ambition, dissension, division, envy. All of those things, works of the flesh. If you're reading something, if you're listening something, and you're feeling those things rise within you, that's the flesh feeding you a lie. Because the truth is, we win, period. He finishes up with drunkenness, wild parties and other sins like these. And I would imagine that most of the people listening to this would say, yeah, well, I don't do those things. But that center section, hostility, quarreling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, selfish ambition, dissension, division, envy. There's a whole lot of that going on right now. And it's all flesh. It's just all flesh. And it will not prosper you to allow that stuff to fester in your heart. What you really need to do is focus on producing the kind of fruit that the Spirit produces within us. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gratefulness, gentleness, and self-control. So yeah, there's a lot of fake news out there. There's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of things going on. Who knows what's true? Who knows what's not? But what's important is that we maintain within ourselves the fruit of the Spirit. And we can pay attention to the other stuff, but never lose sight of the fact that we win. It's all going to be fine. Who knows what challenges we may face? But you can be rest assured that He will be with us. And that's really all that's important. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.